Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowane. We're getting an update on different political races across our region today and, of course, check in on what's happening in terms of the presidential elections in each state. In a little while, we'll hear from Philadelphia Inquirer politics reporter Tom Fitzgerald, who also writes the Inquirer's Big Tent column and blog. There are many topics of interest in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure we'll discuss the Senate showdown between Democratic incumbent Bob Casey and Republican Tom Smith, and we'll hear about congressional contests in the Philly suburbs. Also later on, we'll speak with Daryl Isherwood, editor of PoliticerNJ.com. Many things there to talk about, but I'm sure we'll discuss the Senate race between Democratic incumbent Bob Menendez and Republican challenger Joe Carilas. First up is Delaware, and joining us is WHYY's Mark Eichmann. He's one of the reporters for our Delaware TV news magazine First. His reports are also heard here on WHYY-FM, and you can read them on newsworks.org. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. So let's start with the mayoral race. There's lots to talk about in Delaware. And I want to remind our listeners, if you have a question or comment about politics in Delaware, give us a call. We'll be talking with Mark for about the first 15 minutes in the program. So call soon at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. Mark, let's start with the mayoral race. Dennis Williams has won the Democratic primary. So that kind of means the race is over, right?
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, especially considering the Republican who had been in the race, Kevin Malloy, had his name dropped from the ballot after his filing fee, the check he sent to the Republican Party to file for mayor for the mayor's race, bounced. There was some sort of disagreement. He didn't think the check would be cashed, and it was, and it bounced. So his name was taken off the ballot, and he's now announced plans for a write-in campaign, but in a very Democratic-friendly city like Wilmington. The Democratic primary was pretty much the race for the mayor's office, and Dennis Williams won it fairly easily, finishing 10 points ahead of Kevin Kelly, a city councilman, and also ahead, about 20 points ahead of the current mayor, former chief of staff, Bill Montgomery. It is an interesting situation here in Wilmington. We've had the same mayor for the past three terms, for the past 12 years, in James Baker. And Mayor Baker is a historic three-term mayor that's never happened before in the city of Wilmington, but three terms is the limit. And so now he's moving off, and Dennis Williams, it looks like, will move into the mayor's office next year.
And tell us more about Dennis Williams. What kind of a guy is he? What's his track record? What are his strengths?
He's a tough guy. We did a number of voter forums throughout the city leading up to the primary, and some of the words that voters described their opinion of Dennis Williams as sort of a brash guy, a tough guy. Some call him arrogant, but he definitely is. He's a go-getter. He's spent a lot of time in the state legislature as a representative from Wilmington. Before that, he was a Wilmington police officer, and so he brings this sort of tough on crime stand to the mayor's office and to the race right after he won the primary a couple of weeks ago. He told the violent offenders in Wilmington to pack your bags because he's coming for them. So it's kind of a tough talk, a tough stand on crime, which is the biggest issue in the race in Wilmington, the crime and violence.
Okay, so crime and violence are number one in terms of issues. What are some other issues that the incoming mayor of Wilmington will have to tackle?
Well, it's connected to crime, but it's economic development, and Wilmington has the state's highest unemployment rate. So it's an effort to build jobs here when at the same time you're fighting sort of this impression that Wilmington is a violent city. A few weeks ago, Parenting Magazine listed it as the top violent city in the country for its size of just 70,000 people or so. So it's trying to grow the city economically, bring jobs here, bring residents to Wilmington, while at the same time fighting against this violence program. There's also a budget issue, trying to balance the budget when you have so many unemployed in the city. There's a lot of downtown areas that are government buildings, and they don't pay taxes into the city. So there's sort of this budget battle that has been set up. It's something that the current mayor, Mayor Baker, has dealt with over the past several years. It's sort of turned into a contentious relationship with city council, trying to find the balance in the budget, where to cut and where to increase fees, taxes, and other things. So that's something that the new mayor will have to face as well.
And tell us a bit more about what sets Williams apart from outgoing Mayor Baker. I mean, he's had three terms. A lot of the problems remain in Wilmington. So what is Dennis Williams saying about what is he going to do differently that will hopefully make a difference for Wilmington?
Well, one of the things he's accused the Baker administration of, and one of his opponents was Mayor Baker's former chief of staff, so he sort of had an opportunity to attack the mayor's administration through his attack on Bill Montgomery. And one of the things he said is that criminals are no longer going to be coddled. They're not going to be, in his words, he said that we're not going to do a hug-a-thug program. He's going to get tough, and he's going to go after these guys, be very aggressive with the way the police department is deployed. Mayor Baker's police chief, Mike Zerba, has been under attack for a number of years with increasing violence in the city. So one of the things Dennis Williams has said is that he is going to pick a police chief outside of the city, somebody who has run a police force of several hundred officers, and bring in a new perspective into the police department in hopes of implementing his aggressive policing approach.
Now, Mark, you have mentioned the the troubles of the Republican mayoral campaign candidate Kevin Malloy, whose check bounced. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the general state of the Republican Party in Delaware. The Republicans recently issued a manifesto on the steps of the Legislative Hall in Dover. What did GOP Chairman John Sigler say? What was this manifesto all about?
Well, it's sort of kind of about restoring openness in the General Assembly and sort of giving Republicans another voice, giving the opposition another voice. They've both chambers in the General Assembly, the governor's office, across the board in the congressional delegation, all Democrats. So the stand by Republicans a few days ago was to sort of set their agenda to try to regain some of that control and show that kind of the one-party rule that Delaware is under now is not maybe the best thing, and that voters should select Republicans come November.
We're talking with Delaware, WHYY Delaware reporter Mark Eichmann, and if you want to weigh in on our Delaware conversation, give us a call now at 1-888-477-9499. Mark, obviously we should talk about the gubernatorial race. Jack Markell is up for re-election. His Republican challenger is Jeff Craig. What has Markell accomplished so far? What are some of his critics saying?
Well, one thing the governor has done so far is he's made a lot of progress in keeping the state from falling into dire financial states. The state is not in boom times for sure, as nobody is in the current economy statewide. But the governor has made a number of steps to try to draw businesses here. Some of those steps have been more fruitful than others. There was a refinery that had closed in Delaware City that had cost hundreds and hundreds of jobs, and the governor, one of his big selling points and campaign points is his rescue of that refinery and reopening it. There was the Chrysler plant and the GM assembly plant here in Delaware that were both shuttered. The Chrysler plant sort of now being reworked as a campus for the University of Delaware for science and technology, and also a factory for Bloom Energy to make their sort of alternative energy Bloom boxes. And the GM plant is a little bit of a murkier picture with Fisker, the battery-powered car maker, still in the process of setting up shop there, and it's still sort of unknown whether that will pay off. But his critics have said that he hasn't done enough, that unemployment is still high in the state, which it is. So there's room for criticism there, but Jack Markell is very popular in a Democratic state, so I would be very, very surprised if he were outed in November.
Mm-hmm. And Republican challenger Jeff Craig has said that on his website, right there when you go there, it says 50,000 jobs have been lost in Delaware since Markell took office. So that's obviously what he's running on. Can you give us a little bit of background on Craig and his chances? You just said he probably does not have a chance, but talk a bit about his background and what's his plan and his promise.
Yeah, he's a small businessman, which certainly plays well when you're trying to when you're playing the unemployment card. You know that he's a guy who's been in business, he's hired people, he's created jobs, and so we've heard that sort of on the national campaign too, of the job creator kind of campaign, and that's really where he's coming from. You know that he has done it before, he can do it again. Markell himself, a former business guy, and that kind of gets him, gives him some credentials from more fiscally conservative people who see him as, you know, he knows how businesses work. You know, very steep hill for Craig to climb for really any Republican here in the state. Not that it can't be done, but it's a steep hill. And Governor Markell, again, very popular, and you know, we'll see what happens.
So obviously, our pollsters predicting Delawareans will vote for Obama in the presidential election.
Haven't seen any specific polls, but I think that's a safe bet.
And what kind of campaign ads are you seeing in the state? Are you seeing a lot of presidential campaign ads, or what are you seeing on television?
You know, it's kind of an interesting thing here in Delaware that for the way TV goes. You know, there's no real commercial television station specifically focused on Delaware. So if a Delaware candidate needs to get TV time, they have to go to Philadelphia to buy very, very expensive time. That money is then wasted on voters in Pennsylvania and New Jersey who can't really help them. So it's sort of a difficult thing to do of TV advertising for Delaware candidates. Not that it doesn't happen. There's a Senate candidate who's running against incumbent Senator Tom Carper. Mm-hmm. His name is Alex Pyres, and he's planning on running, I think, starting next week, a number of campaign ads in his effort. He's an independent candidate, and he'll actually be featured on the show tonight on First at 5:30 on WHYY. We have a sit-down interview with him and his independent campaign against Senator Carper, a very interesting character.
All right, just a few seconds left. Are you seeing a lot of Joe Biden? Or
I haven't actually seen the vice president, actively campaigning out for anybody, but I'm sure that will probably change as we get closer to November if anybody here felt that they were sort of in jeopardy.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
My pleasure, Mike.
All right. Mark Eichmann is part of WHYY's Delaware team. You can see his reports on First on WHYY TV 12 and hear them here on WHYY FM and find them on newsworks.org. Coming up next, we move on to Pennsylvania and chat with Philadelphia Inquirer politics reporter Tom Fitzgerald. We'll be right back after a short break. Stay tuned to Radio Times.
Einstein Medical Center Montgomery supports WHYY. Opening late September in East Norriton, Einstein Medical Center Montgomery offers quiet, all-private rooms designed for patients' comfort and safety. Other features include a 24-hour emergency department staffed by board-certified physicians, cardiothoracic surgery, cancer care, orthopedic care, robotic and bariatric surgery, and a maternity unit equipped with a Level 3 neonatal intensive care unit. More information at 1-800-EINSTEIN or einsteinmontgomery.com.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
Inishnua Theater Company supports WHYY. Inishnua begins its 9th season of staging contemporary plays from Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales with the Philadelphia premiere of Scottish playwright David Harrower's A Slow Air, directed by Tom Ring and starring Emma Gibson and Brian McCann. October 2nd to 21st at the Off-Broad Street Theater, 1636 Sansom Street. Details at inishnuatheater.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowane, and we're getting an update on all kinds of different political races across our region today. We just visited Delaware, and now turning to Pennsylvania. Joining us is Tom Fitzgerald. He is the national politics writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer and also writes the Big Tent column and blog. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mike.
So let's start with the presidential race. It seems, or I've heard several people saying, that there is no advertising going on, really, and it appears that the Republicans have given up, and neither the party nor the allied super PACs are spending any money on advertising. Is that something you've observed?
As of this morning, the national super PACs, the National Party and the Mitt Romney campaign have not been advertising in the state. This morning, the Republican Party of Pennsylvania launched its own ad, sort of taking Obama to task for the economy. They felt the need to get something out there. I don't yet know how big that buy is, but basically, the TVs have been dark with anti-Obama, pro-Mitt Romney messages for quite some time, and you know, people are starting to get jealous of Ohio. They're getting all the attention.
Yet Romney is in Philadelphia today. He's probably right now at a fundraiser and then later making a public appearance. So he's here.
He is here, yeah. The fundraiser is pretty lucrative sounding one. He's supposed to get up to $4 million here at the Union League. And then they added a rally out at Valley Forge Military Academy. He hasn't been to the state since July 17th when he went to like a shale drilling company, related company outside Pittsburgh. And he hasn't been to this area since June when he was in Bucks County. So, there is a jolt of Romney today, but it's been largely absent. Now, Republicans and the Romney campaign say, you know, they swear they're not giving up on the state, and that, you know, like the polls that are done in public polls that are independent are saying that Obama's ahead by anywhere from 8 to 12 in Pennsylvania, but that they have polls that show it's tighter, and they say that these public polls are overestimating the number of Democrats who might turn out in their statistical models. It's like a really obscure kind of argument about polling methodology.
And if we're looking at Pennsylvania's voting history, Pennsylvania's have not voted for a Republican president in quite some time, maybe since 1980?
1988 was George H.W.
Yes.
Bush, 41, yeah. And in fact, a leading Republican was pointing out to me the other day that George H.W. Bush was behind by about 7 percentage points in the polls at this point. So, you know, this person was trying to make the argument that Mitt Romney is right in a position where he could still contend. And they do have a better game than they game on the ground, you know, the door knocking and phone calls, some 400 employees and volunteers and 23 headquarters. Of course, the Obama campaign has its own huge operation.
But what's interesting to me is when you're looking at the state of Pennsylvania, it looks like a Republican state on many levels. We have a Republican governor, but yet when it comes to the presidential races, people are voting Democrat. So we're always portrayed as a swing voter state, but then when you're looking at our history, that doesn't really seem to click with that.
Right. I mean, I think we're classified as a swing state, like what you were alluding to, in that there's demographics here, and Republican Party structure is pretty robust, and we should be more competitive. But usually, and in fact, like in Western Pennsylvania, there are many people who are nominally Democrats, but tend to vote for Republicans. They're not loyal to the party on a national level. So there's some suggestions that Romney is having trouble connecting with some of these people, that the attacks by the Obama campaign on Mitt Romney's wealth and his being supposedly out of touch with working people is taking somewhat of a toll. But the biggest thing is that there's a huge gap between support of women voters. I think in the latest Quinnipiac University New York Times poll of our state, Obama was favored over Romney by 19 percentage points among women. The Philadelphia suburbs usually swing toward the Democrats in presidential elections, and that's where the power is.
Yeah, I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation if you have a question about any race in Pennsylvania. 1-888-477-9499. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking with the Philadelphia Inquirer political writer Tom Fitzgerald, and we're talking about different races going on in Pennsylvania. Started off with the presidential race. Now, the voter ID issue is ongoing, but do you think that will have an impact, either however it comes out, do you think that will have an impact on the presidential election outcome in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's hard to tell. I guess, we'll find out whether, how suppressive or not this policy is. There's some indication, I think, there's been a reaction against it that's mobilized Democratic and Democratic-leaning groups to register people, to educate, to make sure that they have the right kind of ID. So the Republicans, in hoping to, they say tamp down on fraud, but in hoping to limit, the Democratic vote, or what they see as fraud among that swells the Democratic vote, is a better way to put it. They may have actually fired up the opposition and got them motivated. So it could be a wash, in other words. And also, the Quinnipiac poll earlier in the week found 99% of people said they have the right ID. That was interesting to me. Now, they, a certain percentage of them could be wrong.
Yeah.
They think they have the right ID, and there'll be trouble on election day. We won't know, although the judge seemed to be hinting that, it's going to go forward in some form. So looks like we're going to see.
If nothing else, it made us all look for our birth certificates, right?
That's true. We all had to find those with the seal on it. Yeah.
So I want to move on to the very important Senate race. Democrat Bob Casey is up against Republican challenger Tom Smith. And I wanted to get your sense, give us a background on Tom Smith. He is a self-made millionaire. What's his background? What's his story?
That is his story, his entire story that he's that he's selling anyway. I mean, there's I'm sure more to the man that's beneath the surface. I mean, he's not just that, but he was a union coal mine worker and a farmer who just eventually ended up owning a coal mine and a trucking company and still owns a farm. He is a classic American dream story, and sort of a businessman of the type that Mitt Romney is selling his business experience, but it's really a kind of cerebral Wall Street experience. And here, Tom Smith is the type of man who actually built it himself, to use like one of the catchphrases of this election season. And he was also active in the Tea Party movement, although for most all of his life he'd been a registered Democrat.
Hmm.
He's from out in the West in Armstrong County. He's sort of one of those people I was talking about earlier, the conservative Democrats who often vote Republican. He was a Tea Party leader and a local official. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Where does the race stand? I know that it was a long shot in the beginning. Now it has tightened. The Washington Post has recently changed their prediction to leaning Democratic. So where are we?
I think the Washington Post is probably in the ballpark because Smith has been able to put a bunch of his own money into ads. He had... You know, the normal course is it's very hard for a challenger to get people to, in his own party, to pony up money to take on an entrenched incumbent like Bob Casey. Smith has put up about an estimated $8 to $9 million so far. I mean, that's counting the primary, too, when he had to defeat several other Republicans to get the nomination. And that buys a lot. That seems to be he's making up ground now. I don't know... if he'll be able to catch up to Bob Casey, but it's certainly tightened and got people's attention. With Mitt Romney, if Mitt Romney continues to underperform in Pennsylvania, as some of the polls have indicated, it might be harder for Smith because, you know, more Democrats would come out if they sense a win by, that Obama's going to win or that they're needed for Obama.
Yeah. We have a call. We have Paul standing by. He's calling from Levittown. Hi, Paul. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning. Thank
good morning.
You. I wonder if it's possible to dream and hope for any type of a coattail effect. Up here in Bucks County, there is an incumbent by the name of Mike Fitzpatrick who it seems like may or may not be affected by which way the whole state is going in the presidential race. And I just wonder what your thoughts or predictions are about that.
Yeah. So Mike Fitzpatrick is up against Kathy Buchvar, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's what we're talking about. Okay, Tom Fitzgerald, what's your take?
Paul, I think that there's quite a possibility that if anybody in the congressional delegation might be sensitive to coattail effect, it could be Fitzpatrick because the Bucks County, the 8th district up there in Bucks, is one of your classic swing districts. There's a rating system that sort of looks at electoral results over the last several elections and comes up with a number as to its partisan leaning, and it's sort of a +1D Democrat now, but it's been similarly Republican in the past, and just look at Mr. Fitzpatrick's history. He was elected in 2004. There was a Democratic wave in 2006, which was a national effect, and he was wiped out. 2008, there was Obama was at the top of the ticket, and he didn't even try. And then in 2010, when there was anti-democratic sentiment against Obama. And with the Tea Party movement and all, Fitzpatrick came back and is now the incumbent. So, in other words, like the 8th Congressional District has a record of being responsive to the national trends. So I would expect, if Obama does extraordinarily well there, and that could help Buchvar.
And I want to ask you a few questions about his Democratic challenger, Kathy Buchvar. There is a website called Radical Kathy. And, of course, today or yesterday, she has been somehow connected with Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I want to quote my colleague, Dave Davies, who writes, "It's just not an election until Mumia Abu-Jamal makes it into a pail of slop being slung by some candidate or another."
That's a great line, by
Dave. He does always write the best lines. So, what is that connection, however thin it is?
As I understand it, the connection is that her husband, who is an attorney, is so tenuous, defended Mumia's literary agent from charges that she incurred in 1999 for protesting, sort of like a disorderly persons offense. And before that, he had some sort of representation of one of the witnesses in the original case. He wasn't involved in trying the case, but I guess this witness felt intimidated by the police and wanted an attorney. Those are the facts as they're known. It seems quite a leap to many people that this National Republican Congressional Committee is trying to then link her, the spouse, to Mumia, when even the husband's relationship to this seems secondary at best.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, there are even, it's sort of like a poor man, it's almost like a poor man's Willie Horton thing, you know, I mean, just bring in Mumia and try to, you know, try to like stampede some voters away from her.
Let's take another quick phone call. We have Greg joining us from Upper Darby. Hi, Greg, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
My wife works for the school district, and a lot of things have been going through that put through by Governor Corbin and the Republican Party. And I was wondering, even though he's not running, is it possible that that could also fire up a lot of the Democrats and even Republicans that might be aware of what's been going on, that they're not comfortable with the current situation in Pennsylvania, that they could actually force a heavier turnout, the Democrat, or even swing votes from Republicans to the Democratic side?
All right, Tom, we just have about a minute left in this segment, so what's your take on that?
Greg, yeah, I think that Corbett's policies could motivate some Democratic voters and Republican, turncoats, if you will, or swing voters, probably more in the legislative races that are also going on to register, their opposition to what Corbett's doing in the for Democratic candidates seeking to take control of the state house in Harrisburg. Don't know exactly how that would transfer to, say, Tom Smith, or in your district, you know, the Pat Meehan race or the presidential race, if at all. It might not. Those voters that come out could split, you know, those type of people who are concerned about these education cutbacks and other policies might vote for their Democratic candidate for the state house or Senate and then vote for Romney, for all we know. But it could bring out some people, I believe.
And Tom, we just about have 30 seconds left in this segment. So what are some other races we should keep our eyes on, or what are some of the big things we should keep looking for?
So some of the biggest races this time are actually out in western Pennsylvania, 12th Congressional District. If people are interested, it's conservative Democrat Mark Kritz, who was the successor to Jack Murtha. He's facing a close challenge as a toss-up with a Republican lawyer who's run for Congress out there before. And that will be an interesting test of the Medicare issue and how salient that is, because that district, the 12th Congressional District of Pennsylvania, has one of the largest percentages of Medicare recipients in the country.
And with that, we're going to have to close. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom Fitzpatrick.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Tom is the national politics writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer and writes the Big Tent blog. And coming up, we'll move on to New Jersey. Stay tuned to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Temple University's Fox School of Business supports WHYY. The full-time global MBA from Temple University's Fox School of Business is a newly designed two-year MBA that includes international residencies, live consulting projects, and professional development for aspiring business professionals wanting real-world experience and a team-based approach to learning. More online at fox.temple.edu/MBA. Temple University's Fox School of Business. Discover the power of Fox.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. How young is too young for a high-contact sports like soccer and football? We'll hear the latest about head trauma. Also, new music from the British punk rock band The Vaccines. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, This Is the Week That Is, the election special. Written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and the This Is the Week That Is ensemble, 1812's annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on all the news that's fit to skewer. Tickets available at 215-592-9560 or at 1812productions.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Marty Moskowain. We're going over important political races across our state today. And now we turn to New Jersey. Joining us is Daryl Isherwood. He's editor of PoliticerNJ.com. Daryl, thank you so much for being on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
And I want to ask our New Jersey listeners to give us a call if you have questions about those aspects of political races happening in New Jersey. 1-888-477-9499. Again, our number here talking about New Jersey is 1-888-477-9499. Daryl Isherwood, I would say let's start with the Senate race between Democratic incumbent Bob Menendez and Republican challenger Joe Carillas. What is happening there at the moment? What are the polls telling us?
Well, at the latest poll came out this week, shows, at least at this point, it's a fairly comfortable lead for Bob Menendez. He's up, I think it was, the latest one was 15 points among likely voters, which is huge. That's the second, the last poll before that was a week or two ago, that had him up, I think, 14 among likely. So it's, and they were two different polling agencies. So he has a fairly comfortable lead. Bob Menendez has a huge war chest. He's got about $10 million in the bank compared to about $3 million for Carillas. So barring something, I don't want to say catastrophic, but, you know, barring a huge turn of events, I think that race right now is looking solidly Menendez.
And your site recently had a very in-depth interview with Menendez. Talk a bit about his accomplishments and what kind of a guy he is and also the kind of criticism he draws.
He's an interesting guy. He's very into foreign affairs. He sits on the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. He has been very active in the Iranian issues, pushing sanctions for Iran. He is also at home, not so well known. That's his main criticism, is that he has not, at least in the last couple of years, spent a lot of time cruising up and down the state. So when you look at his poll numbers, while he has a comfortable lead, his approval ratings are not great. His name recognition numbers are not great. And so he tends to get some criticism for that. He also faces some criticism as sort of the consummate party insider. I mean, he's been involved in politics for decades at the local and state and national level. And so he draws criticism as sort of a boss of sorts, a party boss of sorts. But in sitting and talking to the guy, you know, one of the things that always strikes me when you talk to successful politicians is it's very evident why they're successful. He's an engaging guy. He can talk on a number of different subjects. You know, we threw, I don't know, a dozen questions at him, and he didn't balk at one. Answered everything in depth. It's easy to see why some of these people are successful at politics.
What about Joe Carillas? What is his background? What are his strengths? What are his weaknesses?
Joe's a state senator. Been in the state senate quite a while before that. I think he was in the assembly for a couple of years. And he is a well-regarded state senator. The thing you can say about him in this race is he is working his tail off. He is up and down the state meeting with people, pushing his message of job creation, and it's a tough year. It's just absolutely a tough year for him to run, and I think that obviously he knew that going in. It's a, you know, with the presidential election, it's and Obama on the ballot in a blue state, it's just a tough year for a Republican to run on the statewide race. Joe's name recognition is not good at this point. That's been one of his biggest hurdles, is getting his name out there, just people who know him. He's from Monmouth County, and he's been a state senator for a long time, as I said, but people just don't know who he is.
Is Chris Christie supporting him?
Yes. The governor is actively supporting him. The governor said the other day he plans to get out next month to actively campaign for Krulos. Krulos is a Christie insider. I mean, the two are that's sort of been his calling card in the state for the last 2 years, since, or 2.5 years, that Christie's been in office.
Now, this is an important race nationally. So what are the national parties doing to throw their weight around to support the candidates?
There really hasn't been much of anything.
Huh.
In fact, if you read that interview we did with Menendez, that was one of the most interesting pieces of it. Was he's not begrudging it, but he's saying, you know, even the Obama campaign doesn't really have a presence in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The president's up by, again, he's up by 15 as well in New Jersey. So there really is no campaign presence. So Bob Menendez is kind of carrying the torch statewide. And obviously he's doing okay. He's raising a ton of money and he's doing well in the polls, but he's doing that on his own. And I don't think anybody on the national Republican side really has gone to bat for Joe at this point, because it's just, you know, it's one of those races. I don't think it's on anybody's radar at this point because of the polling numbers.
Now, speaking of the presidential race, many people watched Chris Christie at the Republican National Convention. How important is his influence in you know, the way New Jersey voters make their decision, or not?
I think it's somewhat important. I mean, obviously, the governor's popularity is huge. His poll numbers are anywhere from 55 to 59% with the last couple of polls out. So people listen to what he has to say, and obviously they like what he's doing. I don't know that that's necessarily going to translate into votes for Joe Carillo's. Maybe some, but I don't know that that's going to be enough to make that a competitive race. The governor has shown some coattails, but even last year during the legislative races, Republicans didn't pick up any seats, and the governor was out campaigning for a number of candidates. Now, that had as much to do with, or more to do with, the legislative map than it did with anybody's popularity, but still, his presence didn't translate into victories for the Republican Party.
If you want to join the conversation on elections happening in New Jersey, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. I want to move on now to South Jersey's 3rd District, and there, of course, we have Shelley Adler. She's Harvard-educated attorney running against John Runyon, freshman Republican congressman, former Eagles lineman. This race has enough drama just just in the candidates' backgrounds.
It does. This one is, I would say this is the main race that everybody's focusing on in New Jersey right now. This is it's not quite a rematch, but 2 years ago, John Runyon ran against Shelley Adler's husband, John Adler, who was the incumbent at that point, Democratic incumbent. Runyon beat him by a couple of points and went on to Congress, and then very soon after, John Adler tragically got sick and died. His wife now has decided to pick up that torch and try to unseat Runyon to take back that seat. She has a tough road as well. I mean, this has traditionally been a Republican seat. Adler was the first. John Adler was the first Democrat in years to have won in that district. And when Runyon took it back, then we had our first round, or our round of congressional redistricting last year, and the district actually became more Republican. They removed Cherry Hill and they added Brick.
And Shelley Adler has been chopped out of that district, right?
Correct. She is from Cherry Hill, and so she made the decision to run in that district despite Cherry Hill's absence. And she has said, obviously, that if she wins, I think what she said initially is she will move to the district at the end of the year. So the understanding is if she wins the race, she would move to the district.
And what's her background in politics? We know her, of course, as John Adler's wife and now, sadly, widow. But what is her background in politics?
She was an elected official. She was on the Cherry Hill Council. And so she's got, you know, she's not a complete newcomer. She has run elections before. She has a very good campaign staff. She's got, that was one of the things we highlighted in a recent piece we did on this. A behind the scenes look at that. There are two crack political heavyweights running those races on either side. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic from behind the scenes. I mean, she's got the best in the business down there running her race. So it just remains to be seen if she can overcome the numbers and the money advantage that Runyon has.
And what's Runyon's record been so far? What are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? Where do people criticize him, applaud him?
You know, it's funny. He ran into some problems in the last race because he was running against, you know, John Adler was a career politician, also Harvard educated, by all accounts, a smart guy, a sharp guy. And anytime issues came up, you know, Runyon had a little bit of a tough time. Since then, we have been told he has worked really hard at just getting a grasp on the issues. And one thing he has embraced while in Congress is veterans issues at Fort Dix is in his district. So he has embraced veterans issues, and now veterans are supporting him, and that's support he did not have in the last race. So that's an important piece to this race.
Yeah. But what do you think it is? Is it still his name recognition that keeps him popular or that really helps him from his time with the Eagles?
Yeah, it's funny. The last election, I brought that up to an operative in South Jersey, and he sort of dismissed Runyon's name recognition with, well, he was a lineman. It's not like he was quarterback. But I remember driving up the Philadelphia Turnpike and seeing a billboard with Runyon's face on it when he was with the Eagles. I mean, he was a very prominent member of that team for a lot of years. So I don't think you can dismiss his name recognition at all. And it's, you've got that. You've got the fact that he's an incumbent, and that always creates an advantage. And you've got a Republican-leaning district. So it's
a lot of things
in his favor.
As I said,
it's a tough road, and he's got, I think, about $1.5 million. I think probably about $900 in the bank now. He's raised about $1.5 million.
Now, what's the tone been of this election? Typically, these races tend to get nasty. They are about destroying each other's character and personal lives. Has the tone been a bit nicer? Because in this case, you are attacking Shelley Adler, who's the widow of John Adler. And I guess doing that would be seen as in bad taste, even in the game of politics.
Yeah, this one has been a nicer tone than the last one. The last John Adler Runyon race was nasty, and there were all kinds of accusations on either side, and some what I would call underhanded things that were done. This one has not carried that tone. It's been a little bit, I'd say, sleepier than that race was, and it has not turned as nasty as that did. And you may be right; it may be. Maybe a function of the fact that Shelley Adler is a widow. It may also be a function that it's not as close a race as that was.
And what is Shelley Adler attacking Runyon on? What are the issues, or what are her campaign platforms, really?
Basically what they've tried to do is tie Runyon to the extremes of the Republican Party. And that's come as much from her, as much from the national Democrats as it has from her. So, they try to, any time there's a vote, I'm trying to think even what the latest one was, but that has been their tactic literally since the day Runyon took office. I mean, from the National Democratic point of view, they have tried to tie him to the extremist wing of the GOP. And it's, they have literally targeted him from his first vote in Congress with that mantra. And it's interesting. They have done those sort of attacks, I'm talking about the DCCC now, but they have not yet stepped up with any money. And I was actually talking to a South Jersey operative just before we got on the phone, and basically what he's telling me is unless the DCCC steps up with some money, that race is in trouble. Shelley Adler's in trouble because they just don't have the cash to compete with Runyon, and without that extra infusion, it's going to be tough.
Another race or another issue I want to talk to you about is Representative Rob Andrews. He's under fire in the 1st District for using campaign funds, allegedly, to pay for personal things. Fill us in on what's happening there.
Well, the latest thing was at the beginning of this month, the House Ethics Committee the House Ethics Committee has this complaint now. So at the beginning of this month, there was a report issued which basically said there is reason to believe that he used his campaign cash for personal reasons, which is a no-no. And it's now in the hands of the House Ethics Committee, who can do a number of things. I mean, they have said they're going to continue investigating. And what could come out of that is some sort of a censure, you know, a fine, that sort of a penalty. But it's yet to be seen. They could also do nothing at this point.
But there is a trip to Scotland that apparently his wife signed off on?
Correct. There was a trip to Scotland to a wedding of the daughter of a fundraiser. And all told, I believe it cost him about $30,000.
Wow.
And for that money, he flew to Scotland, he stayed in first-class accommodations, attended the wedding, and brought his entire family with him. Now, his explanation at the time was, or when he was, not at the time, but when he was called on it, was, this is a fundraiser, and this trip allowed me to improve my relationship with this fundraiser. And it didn't sit well, obviously, with some people, and so he eventually paid back the $30,000. But by that point, you know, it had already, the damage had already been done. There were a couple of other things too. There was a $10,000 charge for a party at his house that was billed as a joint party for his daughter's high school graduation, as well as his 20th year in Congress. And that had some people, you know, questioning as well. You know, why is he paying for his daughter's graduation
right.
out of his campaign funds?
Okay, Daryl, we're coming up on the end of the show in a few seconds. What are the races that you really want us to keep an eye on?
You know, this is a sleepy year in New Jersey. It really is. There are no real strong competitive congressional seats. Obviously, anything can change, but this is a very sleepy year. I mean, most of this was decided when we adopted our new congressional map earlier this year.
All right. And with that, we're going to have to go. Thank you so much. Daryl Isherwood is editor of PoliticerNJ.com. You've been listening to Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain.